Hello and welcome to the 2025 season premiere of Musings on Golf. And what a 2025 it's going to be in the game of golf. I'm Kelly Elbin, and along with my co-host and dear friend Bob Bupka, the voice of golf for TalkSport in the UK, we are thrilled to welcome Luke Donald, the returning Ryder Cup captain for Europe, as our first guest of the year. Well, Robert, by my count, we're only about 80 days from the start of the Masters. And by my calendar, we're about 8 months from the biggest spectacle in golf, the Ryder Cup, to be held in your old backyard on Long Island. Bob, I know you've known Luke Donald for a long time. It sure was fun visiting with Captain Donald. Our listeners, Robert, are going to be in for a real treat.
So well said, Kelly. Luke, he's been a gentleman since day one. I mean, I knew him when he first started playing professional golf. Then he became the number one player in the world of professional golf, and then went on to be a Ryder Cup captain that got the trophy over in Rome. And now a much more formidable task is going to be to try and get this Ryder Cup trophy back when they visit Bethpage, Long Island. I can't think of a more hostile team place for any team to come in and try and win something from the United States than Bethpage Black.
Agreed. There is no more hostile environment, and the New Yorkers will live up to and make it as loud as possible, Bob, as you know. Hey, let's take a step back in regards to Luke, because Bob, as you remember, his was not exactly the easiest path. In fact, Henrik Stenson was the original selection as the European Ryder Cup captain for Rome in 23. Henrik joined LIV Golf. Ryder Cup Europe said, "You're out." They went then with Luke. And Bob, Luke's a really detailed, disciplined guy, well-liked among his peers. And from the start, as you'll hear a little bit later, our listeners, he glommed onto it, Bob. He was ready to go, and he did a great job. Frankly, he was the much better captain in 2023. There's no question.
Oh, no question about that. And you know, one of the things about Luke Donald, it's kind of ironic, but he's the most docile human being that you ever want to meet, and yet the most ferocious Ryder Cup captain. His players respect him so much, as I do and you do, Kelly. Luke Donald is just basically a good all-around guy who has done tremendous things in the world of golf.
Before we set up this interview, Bob, you and I have enjoyed these interviews that we've done, and we typically do them, Bob, at a normal time for human beings. But in this particular case, because Luke happened to be and is now in Dubai, which, again, by my clock is 9 hours ahead of Palm Beach Gardens, Florida, and is 8 hours ahead of Houston, where you are, we were talking with Luke at 3 in the morning Eastern and 2 in the morning Central. But you know what? It was all worth it, Bob. And then, I don't know about you, but I hit the hay pretty quickly.
Yeah, I think I was falling asleep as I was saying goodbye. But Luke got a chuckle out of it. And you know what, Kel? He appreciated the effort that we were making. And we appreciated the effort of Julius Mason and Scott Crockett for their help in setting that all up. That's not an easy thing to get the Ryder Cup captain, you know, this close to the Ryder Cup being played.
Those are the two individuals, Julius with the PGA of America, Scott Crockett with the DP World Tour, who are, they're untouched, honestly, when it comes to the PR communication side. And in this particular instance, enabling us, Bob, to have 20 minutes with Captain Donald. It was terrific. Hey, before we get to Luke, one more thing. WilliamandHarry.com and William and Harry have been great partners of ours. Rhett Butler is a good buddy, and they have a booth at the PGA show coming up next week. And would encourage anybody who's on the, I guess you could say, the business side of golf, the PGA show in Orlando. It's the largest trade show in the world. Get to booth 7760 next week in Orlando. Pay them a visit. I mean, where luxury meets performance on and off the links, That is their tagline. And, you know, along with our friends at Titleist, they've been so good to us. Get to the Titleist booth and please get to the William and Harry booth.
Yeah, booth 7760. You're going to be amazed if you've never seen this this golf shoe before. It is simply incredible, not only from performance, but from looks, comfortability, and it's going to make you play just a little bit better.
I love it. You're going to hear from you're going to hear from Titleist and William and Harry right now, and then right after that, a wonderful late night interview that Bob and I had with European Ryder Cup captain Luke Donald. Our friends at William and Harry are always looking for ways to stand out in the crowd. So for anyone who belongs to a country club, William and Harry can have your shoes private labeled to fit your specific needs. The same applies to your company or any organization you might be affiliated with. This makes you a clear winner. Why? Well, you have a better quality shoe that feels great, and you have the logo of your club, company, or organization on your shoes that really makes you stand out on the golf course. To learn more, visit williamandharry.com today and be sure to input our promotional code 15OFF, M-O-G, for a 15% discount at williamandharry.com.
Titleist is the number one ball in golf. Yes, being number one is a number, and more players trust the Pro V1 or Pro V1X than all other golf balls combined. But being number one is more than a number. It's a mindset. It's a relentless mission to design and manufacture the best performing golf balls in the game, so you can chase whatever your number one is. Titleist, the number one ball in golf.
Bob, our special guest today, Captain Team Europe, to a resounding Ryder Cup victory in Rome in the fall of 2023. And he's looking for a repeat triumph this September at Bethpage Black on Long Island. He's the first man to lead consecutive European teams since Bernard Gallagher did so over three Ryder Cups in the 1990s. What a thrill to welcome Luke Donald to Musings on Golf. Captain, how are you?
I'm doing well. Thank you. Thanks for having me on. Here in sunny Dubai at the moment. So, all good. Thank you.
Luke, certainly an honor and a pleasure. You know, I knew you before anything, before you were the number one player in the world. And the one thing that amazes me about Luke Donald, you have never changed. You're the nice guy before you got all those accolades. And you're the same nice guy now, a real tribute to the European team. And by the way, let me give you a quick shout out, Kel. Julius Mason, Scott Crockett, the behind the scenes guys, put in so much effort to make it available for us to get to talk to Luke.
You don't come any better.
Well, thanks, Bob. We've shared many stories over the years and interviews, and it's always been a pleasure talking to you. And I might be Mr. Nice Guy, but there's a competitive streak down there. You don't get to world number one by just being a nice guy. So I'm glad you see me that way.
Hey, Luke, I get to start the questions. I kind of want to go very, very broad. You know, I worked a number of Ryder Cups during my time at the PGA of America, and I have had a lot of people have asked me, you know, as far as the American players, how vested are they in winning the Ryder Cup? How much does it mean to them? And my stock answer has always been, look, the Americans want to win the Ryder Cup. The Europeans live for the Ryder Cup. And I'm wondering if you could sort of explain what galvanizes you, your predecessors, captains and players, and your current team that you'll have. What is it about the Ryder Cup that fires up so many for so long on the European side?
I think we look back at history and we talk to a lot of the old players, the Sevis, the Langers, the Woozies, the Faudos, those guys. You know, and it was about proving a point that Europe was, you know, was good enough to compete against the Americans. And I think there's lots of great history behind this rivalry. And we definitely, you know, lean a lot into that and lean a lot into trying to create that culture, that messaging, that it's important. And, you know, I think there's nothing quite like a Ryder Cup. The passion, the energy, the kind of playing for more than yourself, all that goes with it. And we certainly always sort of end up on the Sunday evening, you know, experiencing one of the best weeks of our years. You know, we put a lot of effort into trying to make that week fun for the players, inspirational for the players. And you see that a lot on the golf course, you know, with their play. They play and they raise their games against very strong American teams.
Before you became captain, when we visited Rome, which I don't like to think about too much, but that was a stellar performance by you and the Ryder Cup team. How hard is it, Luke, to come back and try and do it all over again and then throw in Bethpage Black? Might be the most hostile place to play a Ryder Cup that we have in the U.S.
Well, it's not going to be easy, Bob, that's for sure. But, you know, when I was standing on that podium in Rome lifting the trophy and the guys were showing two more years, that sort of meant a lot to me, obviously, that I'd done a good job. And when the chance came to do it again and to try and create history and be the first European captain to win home and away since Tony Jacklin some 40 years ago, or so, you know, that inspires me. I've never kind of backed away from a challenge. I love the opportunity to try and put a plan in place to give our team the best chance. We understand the odds are a little in favor of the U.S. They will be the favorites and we will be the underdogs again. But we've proven that we're quite comfortable being in that underdog mentality.
You know, in that same documentary, it was fascinating. There's so many voices in there. Rory said this about you. He said that once you became captain leading into Rome, that for him, he said he felt like you really became your whole world. Is that a fair statement?
I think it's pretty close. I certainly don't ever take on anything without wanting to do it in a half-assed manner. You know, if I'm going to do something, I'm going to do it well. I'm going to do it right. That's kind of how I've approached my individual career. I'm always looking for ways to improve. And I certainly knew when I got the role before Rome, it'd be difficult. I had to lean on a lot of advice. I had to read a lot of books. I had to do a lot of prep work to try and feel like this team was going to be ready. We'd just come off the worst defeat ever, Whistling Straits. Very young, strong American team that looked like they were going to be around for and dominating Ryder Cups for a long time. And you know, I obviously had a lot of pressure on me. Didn't want to be the first captain in 30 years to lose a home Ryder Cup. So I did put in a lot of time and a lot of effort, and it was a great focus for me to kind of get my hands on.
Luke, your wife Diane certainly has made a major contribution to all of your efforts as Ryder Cup captain. As a married man, you can't do it alone. If you don't have the support of your wife, you got no chance.
She was tremendous, Bob. You know, really took on the role of lady captain to a new level, I think. You know, she had such a great plan for the week. She organized the gala dinner, first person to shut down the Spanish Steps in Rome in 40 years. You know, she had a plan for everything, all the gifting, the messaging, how the wives were treated, how the families were treated. You know, we were together, you know, pretty wanting to create the atmosphere where we felt like a big family. And she certainly was a big part of that.
You know, all the other awards that Luke Donald has won, he won a very prestigious award that not enough people know about. It's called the Gold Tee Award. It's presented by the Met Golf Association. When you look back at the who's who that won this award, how about let me throw out the name Bobby Jones, Byron Nelson, Tom Watson, Jack Nicklaus, Arnold Palmer, Gary Player, Luke Donald. Boy, there's a nice ring to all those names.
That last one seemed a little out of place amongst the legends in the game, but no, very, very, very much honored to have received that. I was up in New York in September, October for the Year to Go event and managed to go and pick up this award. And yeah, when I saw the list of honorees and people who have won it before, it really did sink in, like what an honor it was to be given that.
Hey, I had the great pleasure, and I know a lot of people have, of watching Una Familia, the just fantastic documentary that the good folks at the DP World Tour put together. Paul McGinley, the 2014 captain, beat Tom Watson at Glen Eagles and really did a terrific job. He said something in there that kind of caught my attention. He said that the job of the captain is to, quote, create a platform for the players to play and be successful. Luke, what does the word platform mean in that context as the captain?
I think he's really talking about the right culture, you know, the right messaging, the right story to get these guys inspired. Obviously, 51 weeks out of the year, you're playing very much individual. You're on your own. You're practicing at home on your own. It's only the Ryder Cup, really, out of all the golf events we play, where you come together. You have to kind of put your talents under one umbrella. You have to kind of put your egos a little bit out to the side of the door. And I think we do that very well. We embrace it because of the history, because of talking to past legends and understanding how much it means and how much it can impact you as a player and help your individual career. So, you know, I think, it's more about creating that right culture for the guys to succeed, because if you're mentally in a good place and you have the right messaging, I think the guys can obviously perform at their best that way.
Before you became captain, when we visited Rome, which I don't like to think about too much, but that was still a performance by you and the Ryder Cup team. How hard is it, Luke, to come back and try and do it all over again, and then throw in Bethpage Black? Might be the most hostile place to play a Ryder Cup that we have in the U.S.
It's not going to be easy, Bob, that's for sure. But, you know, when I was standing on that podium in Rome lifting the trophy and the guys were showing two more years, that sort of meant a lot to me, obviously, that I'd done a good job. And when the chance came to do it again and to try and create history and be the first European captain to win home and away since Tony Jacklin some 40 years ago you know, that inspires me. I've never kind of backed away from a challenge. I love the opportunity to try and put a plan in place to give our team the best chance. We understand the odds are a little in favor of the U.S. They will be the favorites and we will be the underdogs again. But we've proven that we're quite comfortable being in that underdog mentality.
You know, in that same documentary, it was fascinating. There's so many voices in there. Rory said this about you. He said that once you became captain leading into Rome, that for him, he said he felt like you really became your whole world. Is that a fair statement?
I think it's pretty close. I certainly don't ever take on anything without wanting to do it in a half-assed manner. You know, if I'm going to do something, I'm going to do it well. I'm going to do it right. That's kind of how I've approached my individual career. I'm always looking for ways to improve. And I certainly knew when I got the role before Rome, it'd be difficult. I had to lean on a lot of advice. I had to read a lot of books. I had to do a lot of prep work to try and feel like this team was going to be ready. We'd just come off the worst defeat ever, Whistling Straits. Very young, strong American team that looked like they were going to be around for and dominating Ryder Cups for a long time. And, you know, I obviously had a lot of pressure on me. Didn't want to be the first captain in 30 years to lose a home Ryder Cup. So I did put in a lot of time and a lot of effort, and it was a great focus for me to kind of get my hands on.
Luke, your wife Diane certainly has made a major contribution to all of your efforts as Ryder Cup captain. As a married man, you can't do it alone. If you don't have the support of your wife, you got no chance.
She was tremendous, Bob. You know, really took on the role of lady captain to a new level, I think. You know, she had such a great plan for the week. She organized the gala dinner, first person to shut down the Spanish Steps in Rome in 40 years. You know, she had a plan for everything, all the gifting, the messaging, how the wives were treated, how the families were treated. You know, we were together, you know, pretty wanting to create the atmosphere where we felt like a big family. And she certainly was a big part of that.
Luke, I know you're an avid reader and you've read a fair amount of books on leadership. Is there one that stands out for you in general, or one that you've kind of leaned back on, particularly once you assume the role of captain?
There's been quite a few, to be honest. I loved reading Legacy, which was about the New Zealand All Blacks. You know, they're just their mentality. I've read Drive by Daniel Pink. You know, what really motivates us. Read Belonging by Owen Eastwood. That was a big influence on me, how to create the kind of culture and how to get everyone to feel kind of to step into their own role and feel like they had a role that where they really belonged. That was really important to me. But, you know, there's lots of other books as well. But, you know, I'm always trying to read, take on things and, you know, take little bits here and there and then kind of push it all together and come up with a kind of unified plan.
What are a couple of the differences between being a Ryder Cup player, Luke, and a Ryder Cup team captain?
We'll start thinking about the Ryder Cup a little bit during a Ryder Cup year and trying to make points, but you're still pretty focused on individually each week in it, and that's what your focus is. As a captain, you're spending, you know, 18 months trying to work on a plan, and it kind of engulfs you and it becomes part of you. Like Rory said, you know, it really did become a part of me. So it's a long process. Rather, the players just focus more on that week and the weeks leading up to it. And there's a little bit more pressure as a captain for me, I felt, than being a player, just because once the whistle goes on Friday, when the players, it's a little bit more out of my control. I'm not hitting the shots, I can't control it. Whereas as a player, I felt like I had a little bit more say in, you know, the matches. I could hold a putt, I could hit a good shot, I could put pressure on my opponent. Whereas as captain, I don't get that, don't have that ability.
Hey, Luke, how well do you know Keegan Bradley? And your thoughts on him being the United States Ryder Cup captain?
Yeah, I know Keegan well. We're good friends. We live very close to each other in Florida. We practice together at times, you know, on the road. It's not unusual for us to have a dinner now and again. You know, we're good friends. And it's nice to have a friendship with your opposing captain. You know, I can always pick up the phone if there's an issue or something we want to work out. You know, it's so easy to, I think, because we have a good relationship. So obviously he's a hell of a player still. He's, I think, top 15 in the world. He's continually given himself chances to win PGA Tour events. You know, and I think he thinks himself that he could be a player, a playing captain. And obviously that hasn't happened since 63, I think, Arnold Palmer. But it's what a tremendous achievement it would be if he was. I mean, to be able to do both is tough. It's not going to be easy, but he's certainly a good enough player to play on a Ryder Cup team. I think he still has a Ryder Cup or two in it.
Hey, we're honored to be joined by 2023 and 2025 European Ryder Cup captain Luke Donald here on Musings on Golf. Hey, you mentioned a little bit ago about leaning on people and so forth. I'm wondering, were there any particular European Ryder Cup captains who influenced your thinking, your strategies going into 23?
Yeah, I talked to pretty much all of them, you know, from Padraig Harrington to all the captains that I've served under. I talked quite a lot to Bernard Langer. He was my first captain. I think I got a lot out of him. You know, I think we have very similar personalities, very meticulous, very planning. I talked to Paul McGinley. I talked to Jose Noria. Obviously, he was one of my vice captains. He really came in quite late to the process and was a big influence in the team room. You know, just explaining how much Ryder Cups mean to him. You know, I think that gets you going. It gets you motivated. Gets that energy going. So he was important. But yeah, I've talked to quite a few of them.
What do you think? Why did you do so well as the captain in 23, and are there areas that without divulging too much, you feel you can do better going into Bethpage? Why were you successful in 23?
Well, I think I had a plan. I let the guys know what the plan was. They felt very comfortable. I think I was pretty good at creating a culture where they felt at ease, where they, you know, they bought into the team story, but they also, left them alone enough to be good at what they do individually. It was important for me to kind of create a team that didn't have much hierarchy, where the superstars and the rookies felt like they had things that brought them together, and they felt, had some stuff that would, you know, they'd all shared during their career, that they had similarities. So again, I think that was important, just to make everyone feel like they belong. The practice trip was important for that. Would I do anything better or different? I don't know. There's certainly a lot of the things that we did in Rome will carry over to New York, but it's a different challenge, a different strategy now, because we have to deal with a different atmosphere, a different crowd. So, there'll still be some things this time around that will certainly be different to Rome.
As a New Yorker myself, Lou, I know those crowds there at Bethpage are going to be far from friendly, and they're going to, you know, hope that if they cheer loud enough, they'll be able to get victory. Any special plans to overcome the added anticipation of what you're going to confront yourself with at Bethpage?
Yeah, trying to work on a sponsorship for some noise-canceling headphones for the guys. So, in all seriousness, we know it's going to be loud, it's going to be raucous. So I think the fact that you know that, you can start to prepare. And obviously there's certain things that we're trying to do to get that messaging across. How do you practice? How do you prepare for that? I think you can prepare for pressure. So, you know, that's sort of the things we're still exploring and thinking about. But we'll have a plan and hopefully a unified message to the guys, so they'll be ready in New York.
Hey, Bob, two final questions for me. Luke, first of all, how's your game in general right now?
I'm working still pretty hard on it as much as I can. I played in Cabo last November at the WWT, Worldwide Technology Tournament, and made the cut. And unfortunately, I put some pressure. My back went out. And so I've been a little bit focused the last month on getting that better and healthier. That's certainly a weakness of mine. I think I was overdoing some of the work on my individual game. So I had to step that back a little bit. I won't play a full schedule this year. I'll play probably 14, 15 events, but I like playing. I like competing. It's frustrating when you put the work in and it's hard to crack and give yourself chances to win. You know, a good week for me is a top 25. But I still enjoy it. I still love it. And I still believe that, you know, could be my week one week and have four good rounds. It's important for me to be out here as well, to see the guys, to keep that communication, chatting through what's going on, the plan kind of for New York. And I kind of have two hats on when I'm playing tournaments, captain and player, but I enjoy it both.
A final one for me, and this is completely off Ryder Cup, but it's one we ask all of our guests. If you could have three individuals to kind of create a dream foursome, whether those people are living or deceased, who would round out that foursome for you and where would you play?
I'd probably play at Cypress Point. I love Cypress. Something just magical about it. Who would I have? I think I'd have Muhammad Ali. He was a bit of someone I watched, and I just love his attitude to life, you know? He just looked like he exuded confidence. I got to have one of the greats pick his brain. I've been able to pick brains of Jack Nicklaus and Arnie a little bit, but I would go with Ben Hogan just to see how he approached his game and how he went about it. And, you know, I don't know. I would love to probably say my dad, just because he's been gone now for 13 years. I'd love another chance to play around the golf with him.
What is it about Cypress Point?
It's just the atmosphere of the place. You feel like you're playing holes on the water and the dunes and the trees. It's just great greens. I love old golden age architecture. I love Alistair McKenzie. Just has a good feel about it.
You may feel good about playing Cypress Point, but I guarantee you Cypress Point feels awfully good with Luke Donald playing it. You're not only an outstanding person that plays golf extremely well, you're a wonderful human being, and people can take lessons in following how you act and how you conduct yourself, no matter what. All I'm hoping for, and I think you are too, Luke, is just a great Ryder Cup at Bethpage. Lots of excitement, lots of good competition. I'm coming just shy of wishing the European team very well.
You are from New York, as you said, Bob, so I understand that. But I appreciate that. It's going to be a hell of a Ryder Cup. It's going to be an amazing one. I think all sports fans would love to see a close one this time that comes down to the wire, and hopefully Europe can somehow retain that Ryder Cup. But I'll be trying my best for the team, and it'll be a great event either way.
Just like you, I want to look good and perform at my best on the golf course. And that's exactly why I wear the new WH golf shoes from William & Harry, and you should too. Folks, I love these golf shoes. They're made of deer skin and calf skin. They've got a soft gel insert, and the reinforced hardened soft spikes increase stability and balance. And I got to tell you, they are so incredibly comfortable. So head on over to williamandharry.com to check out the new WH golf shoe. Look your best, play your best with William & Harry. Well, Bob, again, we thank Luke Donald for joining us here on Musings on Golf. I'm excited as an American for Keegan Bradley and the opportunity that he's being given by the PGA of America to lead his charges, the 12 players on the U.S. side, into Bethpage. But you said early on that Luke has a formidable task. I agree. But I think Keegan and the Americans are going to have a formidable task against a very spirited group on the European side, led by a super sharp guy in Luke Donald.
Yeah, you're right about that, Kelly. And they really typify what the Ryder Cup is all about. And boy, it's going to be exciting.
Well, it's the best event in golf. It's not even close. Hey, Bob, back in the day, there was a fellow by the name of Reggie Jackson who you and I saw play. And he was, for obvious reasons, referred to as Mr. October. Hammering one homer after another for the Yanks in the World Series and in the playoffs. I don't know if I can identify a particular month for Nick Taylor, but he has certainly become Mr. Dramatic, Mr. Playoff on the PGA Tour. He gets his fifth win at the Sony Open in Hawaii on Sunday. And we remember a couple of years ago, Bob, where he made that, 100-foot putt to win the Canadian Open in his home country. Sunday, he chips in from off the green for an eagle on 18 to get into a playoff with Nico Echevarria, and then he wins it on the second hole, his fifth win on tour. That's a fun part of golf to me as a spectator, to be able to see that kind of drama when it really matters. That's great stuff.
It really is great stuff. And Nick Taylor displaying an awful lot of talent, awful lot of class, and probably the most important thing, Kel, is the ability to operate under extreme pressure. And that's what the game of golf at the highest level is all about.
You can play well, but you got
to play well at the right time.
Yeah, it's a great point. You think about, just when you're out playing with your buddies and for $10 or whatever, this is the biggest of big times. And let's hear what Nick had to say about getting into that playoff and then winning it.
Try to go is until they don't let you play anymore, essentially. Like I said, Nico and I were kind of neck and neck all day long, and he was hitting it great. He made a couple of really nice putts on 15 and 16 where I missed a couple short ones there. And to be able to hang in there and again, I was one over through seven and kind of get on a birdie streak there. And it's always so bunched here, but, I did a really good job every day, really, of just kind of hanging in there. And fortunate for me, really good things happened at the end.
Bob, isn't that true with a lot of players? Just hang in there, right? I mean, there are superstars. We know this. But a lot of guys just hang around, hit the key shot. That's the way so many PGA Tour and big time events are won.
No, you're right about that. Ben Hogan, I think, said it best a long time ago. He said, it's not the quality of your good shots that gets the job done. It's the quality of your poor shots. The guy that hits the better poor shot is ultimately going to come out on top. And Nick Taylor is certainly displaying a lot of the talent that Ben Hogan possessed.
I want to talk for a minute about that point about the poor shots. And we want to talk about Tiger kind of to wrap this up. But Tiger Woods said to a bunch of kids at a camp a few years ago that there has to be a 7-second rule that applies to you. And what did that mean? Well, he told these kids, look, if you hit a bad shot, and you're going to hit a bad shot, you can mope about it, be upset about it for about 7 seconds. And then you know what? You got the next shot you have to play. So to your point about minimizing those bad shots, and also, Bob, not letting those bad shots get you down and carry over. That's one of the big things about the mental side of our game, right?
It certainly is. The ability to forget that poor shot and move on to your next shot is a defining quality that you're going to find in all champions.
A couple more things on Tiger as we close here. Bob and I are recording this on Tuesday evening, 14th of January. Later tonight will be the second installment of the TGL simulator golf event here in Palm Beach Gardens, Florida, where I live. It'll be Tiger's debut. I know that ESPN had roughly 1 million viewers last week, and expect a lot more coming out of the event tonight. But Bob, but more importantly, Tiger was born in Cypress, California, about 25 miles south of Los Angeles. And I know that the devastating and destructive wildfires throughout the Los Angeles area have affected obviously so many, and Tiger in particular. I saw that he posted today that they're working on something through his foundation to support the relief charities, the relief efforts. Would encourage certainly everybody to do so. But I certainly see that as far as golf is concerned, Tiger will step up as one would expect in a big way for something that's so very personal.
Tiger's always there when he should be there. And that's the greatest compliment I can pay him. Yes, he's an outstanding golfer, wonderful father, great businessman, but he's there when he needs to be there. And that sums up Tiger Woods as far as I'm concerned. I'll say it one more time. Tiger Woods, Tiger is there when he needs to be there.
Love it. And Luke Donald was here with us today. We really appreciate it. We thank him for that. Next week, as the PGA Show gets underway in Orlando, the new CEO of the PGA of America past president, Derek Sprague, is going to join us to preview the show, to talk about a lot of things that are on the PGA of America calendar, including the Ryder Cup coming up in September. For my dear friend, Bob Bupka, Kelly Elbin, signing off on the first episode of Musings on Golf for 2025. Thanks for joining us.